This is VOA News by remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. The pressure for a Belarusian leader, Alexander Lukashenko, to step down continues after thousands of protesters flooded the country's capital Sunday. As many as 200,000 marched, far outnumbering the crowd of Lukashenko supporters who also marched. They were also supported by demonstrators in Prague. The protesters and protests have been constant after a presidential election that gave Lukashenko over 80% of the vote amid allegations of widespread vote rigging. Many residents have been hoping for a regime change since he has ruled Belarus since 1994. Meanwhile, French President Emmanuel Macron says that the European Union should support opposition demonstrators in Belarus. Russia's foreign ministry says that Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo spoke by phone Sunday about Russia's proposal to hold a video summit at the United Nations to discuss Iran. Russian President Vladimir Putin proposed a summit video with the United States and the remaining parties to a 2015 nuclear deal between Iran and world powers Britain, France, China, Germany, and Iran to try to avoid further confrontation and escalation over Iran at the United Nations. More than 774,000 people have died globally from COVID-19. In the United States, it's more than 170,000. There are well over 21 million confirmed infections, with the U.S. making up more than 5.4 million. U.S. President Donald Trump has found a new doctor for his coronavirus task force. Dr. Scott Atlas has joined the White House as a pandemic advisor. Atlas, the former chief of neuroradiology of Stanford University Hospital Medical, has not no expertise in public health or infectious diseases. However, he has been a long critic of coronavirus lockdowns and has campaigned for children to return to schools. This is VOA News. The leader of Australia's New South Wales state apologized on Monday for failing to stop people carrying the novel coronavirus from disembarking from a cruise ship in Sydney in March, triggering what was at the time Australia's worst outbreak. The apology from NSW Premier Gladys Berejiklian for her government's poor handling of the outbreak aboard the Ruby Princess came as the number of deaths from a second wave of infection in Victoria state hit a record 25. Australia has reported more than 23,000 COVID-19 cases, more than 400 deaths, far fewer than many other developed nations, but missteps in the handling of the Ruby Princess and possibly also with hotel quarantine in Victoria have proven costly. Cruise ship passengers had temperatures checked and took a COVID-19 test Sunday so they could set sail on what is being billed as the first Mediterranean cruise after Italy's pandemic lockdown. A cruise ship company, MSC, made the procedures for a crew as well as passengers part of its new health and safety protocols. The MSC Grandiosa departed from the port on Sunday evening for a seven-night cruise earlier this month. The Italian government gave its approval for cruise ships to depart from Italian ports. A cruise around the Western Mediterranean was limited to 70% capacity, but MSC declined to say how many passengers are actually on board. U.S. Democrats are opening their national convention Monday, a four-day virtual affair with delegates and speakers scattered across the country. Plans call for former Vice President Joe Biden to accept the Democratic Party's presidential nomination Thursday night. U.S. President Donald Trump plans to accept his Republican renomination for a second term a week later. U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she is recalling the House of Representatives later this week to vote on legislation to protect the U.S. Postal Service. This follows a Democratic-led House Oversight Committee calling for the Postmaster General to testify at an emergency hearing on mail delays. This comes amid accusations he's gutting the U.S. Postal Service to help President Trump win re-election. White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows pushed back Sunday, saying the president is not going to interfere with anybody legitimately casting their ballots. Government data shows that Japan's economy contracted at an annual rate of 27.8% in April and June, through June, the worst downturn on record, as the coronavirus pandemic slammed consumption and trade. The Cabinet Office reported Monday that Japan's preliminary seasonally adjusted real GDP, the sum of a nation's goods and services, fell 7.8% quarter on quarter. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, August 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The candidate of Tanzania's main opposition party says he is the right choice for the country in the coming October election.
Tanzania today needs fundamental change to its politics and its system of government. And I believe I am the person who can take it forward from where it is now.
There are calls for investigations into alleged political murders in the DRC. Cameroonians held anti-violence protests on Sunday in the country's English-speaking town of Mojoka. And religious leaders in Cameroon's English-speaking region will gather this Wednesday to discuss the increase in violence and killings.
We do not count very much on our influence. We count very much on our consciences that are supposed to speak out against anything that has to do with human life and to be the voice of the voiceless.
And South Africa eases some COVID-19 restrictions. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Presidential candidate of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party says the country needs a fundamental change to its system of governance in order to move forward. Tundu Lissu was named earlier this month as Chadema's candidate for the October 28 presidential election, says he believes he is the candidate who can take Tanzania forward. The ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi CCM party has nominated President John Magufuli for a second term because the party said Mr. Magufuli undertook several development projects in his first five-year term and wants to do more for the country in his second term. Lissu says while it may be true that Magufuli, like his predecessors, has overseen the construction of a number of development projects, what Tanzanians want most is a government that respects people's rights and freedoms.
Our country has been under a system of government that is totally unaccountable to the people and to their representative institutions. The institutions of accountability like parliament, like the judiciary, like the free press, have not been strong and effective in countering a governmental abuse of power. The country needs to move in new directions. And I believe I am the person who can take it forward from where it is now.
Mr. Lissu, I did an interview with a spokesperson for the ruling party, and he told me emphatically that President John Magufuli deserves another 5 years because he undertook several development projects during his first 5 years in office and wants to do more for Tanzanians. Your response?
It is true that the president has overseen construction of a number of infrastructure projects. But what we want is a government that will respect people's rights and freedoms. What we want is a government that will ensure that development projects, infrastructure projects, are of any meaning to the ordinary folks. What Magufuli is doing is constructing these expensive white elephants under conditions which are totally opaque. There is no accountability, there is no transparency about the projects, about their costs, about anything.
President John Magufuli has assured Tanzanians that his government will make sure that the election is free and fair. Do you think the October elections will be free and fair?
President Magufuli cannot be trusted, and I don't trust him, and my party does not trust him. Our National Electoral Commission has never been really independent of the president, and therefore I do not expect this year's general elections to be free, fair, or credible. But all we are asking for, all we are demanding for, in fact, is that we are allowed simply to compete.
Mr. Lissu, a court has summoned you and your sureties to appear on September 14 for what the court calls writing seditious news contrary to the Tanzania Newspaper Act of 2002. What do you make of this summons and the charges, and will you appear in court?
I will appear. I have always stated that I will not run away from these cases, even though I know they are completely groundless. I know they are completely spurious. They are meant to intimidate me, but I don't get intimidated by these types of cheap tactics. So I will appear in court on a date that will be suitable. We are in the midst of the most consequential general elections in our entire history. And I am a candidate. And if I am a candidate in this election, if I'm a nominee of the National Electoral Commission at the end of this month, we will have to discuss with my lawyers and the court to see the best way for me to be able to attend court at the same time, discharge my responsibilities as a candidate for the highest office in the land.
Tundu Lissu is the presidential candidate for Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dodoma. Hundreds of Cameroonians Sunday braved heavy military presence and separatist threats to protest increasing violence and barbarism in the Central African state's restive English-speaking regions. The protest in the southwestern town of Mojoka was provoked by the killing of civilians and other brutality allegedly by the military, which is searching for separatists said to be responsible for a recent wave of attacks and murders of women and aid workers. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
About 300 people, most of them women and children, marched silently on the streets of Cameroon's southwestern town of Mojoka Sunday. 29-year-old Ernestine Naya says Cameroon's Women Peace Movement, which she represents in Mojoka, and four other organizations organized the protests because they are fed up with growing violence in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest and southwest regions.
I am out here today to say no to violence, to decry the killings of innocent civilians and especially women. Our cry today is for the leaders of the nation to do something about the crisis in the north and southwest regions. We all deserve to live in peace in this glorious land God has given us.
Naya said the groups organized the anti-violence protest in Mojoka because it is in the southwestern town that the latest gruesome case of murder was reported. On August 11, Comfort Tumasang, a 32-year-old mother of two, was gruesomely murdered in Mojoka. A video of her beheading went viral on social media, provoking widespread condemnation. Comfort's mother, 63-year-old Mary Tumasang, says separatists accused her daughter of collaborating with the military as an informant. She says she supports the protest because she wants peace to return to Cameroon.
They had their collars. No bring collar me this year. They had their collars. So give me your phone.
She says when separatists came to her home, her frightened daughter, Comfort, did not hesitate to hand over her telephone as the fighters requested. She says 30 minutes later, she watched helplessly as Comfort was forced out of the house to a neighborhood called Sansand. She says in Sansand, the fighters tied Comfort to a tree, but residents raised an alarm and the fighters fled, taking her daughter along. Comfort Tumasang was later found dead in a pool of her own blood. Emmanuel Ledu Engamba, highest administrative officer in Mojoka's Fakot Division, says the troops have been instructed to arrest Tumasang's killers.
These criminals are going to be prosecuted, and action has been undertaken to make sure that they are tracked down.
The separatists say the military organizes some of the attacks on civilians to give fighters a bad name. Civilians say the military brutalizes populations as troops search for separatists suspected to have been responsible for the killings. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Religious leaders from Cameroon's English-speaking regions who say they are disheartened by the recent uptick in violence in the ongoing conflict will gather this Wednesday in Douala to discuss the violence. The conference comes on the heel of the brutal killing of a young woman, as seen in a video that has gone viral. Neither the Cameroon military nor the separatists have claimed responsibility for the killing. Right Reverend Funke Samuel Foba, moderator of the Presbyterian Church, says Wednesday's conference will condemn in strong terms the killings of innocent southern Cameroonians.
We'll be speaking from a religious perspective and on a religious platform, using our religious authority to speak to the consciences of those concerned, to recognize human life as a gift from God. And we hope that the outcome of our meeting will touch the consciences of those concerned.
How much influence do you think that the church or any group from the region have on the level of violence that is going on?
We do not count very much on our influence. We count very much on our consciences that are supposed to speak out against anything that has to do with human life and to be the voice of the voiceless. Those that have the ears will hear us, and we do not care whether we create an impact or not, because it is our religious obligation to do just what we'll do on Wednesday.
I am sure you have seen the video of this young woman who was brutally killed. We spoke with the Ambazonia spokesperson, Chris Anu, told us that the so-called interim government was investigating the circumstances of the killing of this young woman. What do you all know in terms of who carried out this killing?
I do not care to know who carried out the killings. My interest is that human life has been violated. A young lady, harmless and armless, has been brutalized to death, and that is my preoccupation. And so whoever it is that has done it, we are very sure that our meeting will speak to those consciences, because it is a deplorable act that any normal human being should not carry out.
Of course, when you speak to the separatists, they say that their movement is about bringing independence to the Anglophone region. How do people on the ground see this movement?
I think the whole concept of the movement has been defeated, because now the target is the common man on the street. I think as a religious leader, my concern is with the human life and the well-being of the common man on the street. If you evaluate the situation in which people are going through, those in the bushes, those displaced from their comfort zones, those in refugee camps in Nigeria, I wonder whether that is the kind of rulership they would want to give their own people. Whether that is the kind of life they want to give their people.
The Right Reverend Funke Samuel Foba is moderator of the Presbyterian Church in Cameroon. You're speaking with us from the southwest capital of Buya. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Monday, August the 17th. In the DRC, four members of President Felix Tshisekedi's political party were killed last month after protests over what demonstrators say was the hasty nomination of the president of the Elections Commission by the National Assembly, controlled by former President Joseph Kabila's political party. Now, their families, along with organizations such as Human Rights Watch, are calling for a full investigation into what they say are politically linked murders. Human Rights Watch says DRC researcher Thomas Fessy spoke to Ricky Stryak about the current political tensions and the need for an investigation.
No consensus had been found, and so people were angry that the National Assembly, which is controlled by former President Joseph Kabila's political force, had gone ahead and confirmed the nomination. Now, both parties are part of the ruling coalition, but they remain rivals on many topics and issues, and above all on how to share power. Added to that, we've seen an increase in tensions and insecurity in the southern Katanga region along political and ethnic lines, particularly between native Katangans and immigrants and their descendants from the neighboring Kasai region. And history has shown that these tensions can escalate in deadly violence. Katanga is Kabila's stronghold and Kasai is Tshisekedi's. So having four members of Tshisekedi's party found dead in Katanga, three of them recovered from a river following a political protest, sends a chilling warning about the freedom of expression in Congo.
How did family and friends of these young men react to the killings, and are they also calling for investigations?
You can probably imagine the shock and the sorrow of the relatives of the victims. Families have told us how their sons never made it back from the protest and how they went searching for them in the days that followed. In one case, a family found their relative detained at a military-run facility. They were asked to pay $300 to free him, but they couldn't afford it. They were then told to pay $100, but 24 hours later, they received a phone call. A body had been found floating in the river. It was their family members. No family wants to go through such pain of identifying the corpse of their own son or brother, whose body presented marks of cuts and mutilation suggesting possible torture. So beyond their sadness, the families are angry and want to know who did this, and they want the perpetrators to face justice, whoever they are. They're also scared, as they know that all things political can slip into dangerous territory, and they fear retaliation against them. But they are supporting the ongoing investigation, hoping that it will lead to a credible outcome.
That was Thomas Fessy, senior DRC researcher for Human Rights Watch. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Greece. Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera said over the weekend that schools that will meet COVID-19 requirements will be allowed to reopen early next month. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi's government announced the indefinite closure of schools on March 20 before the country registered its first three cases of COVID-19 on April 2. But as of Saturday, Malawi had confirmed 5,026 cases and 157 deaths. In his weekly national address on Saturday, Chakwera said the decision to reopen the schools stems from strides Malawi is making in its fight against COVID-19. He says although the number of those who have been found with the virus has now passed 5,000, only 5% have gotten sick enough to need hospitalization. Even among the 389 health workers who have contracted the virus, we have only lost one, and the rest are in recovery. The daily update by the Presidential Task Force on COVID-19 shows over half of the confirmed cases have so far recovered. This leaves the country with 2,246 active cases out of nearly 40,000 people so far tested across the country. Chakwera said the efforts are worth being commended. He says it is because of their organization that we are able to set some benchmarks for the restoration of social order and recovery of the economy. The move to reopen schools is an apparent response to a request from education activists who last week met Chakwera and told him the closure of schools was jeopardizing the future of students, especially girls. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has eased the country's COVID-19 lockdown restrictions to level 2 beginning 12 a.m. Tuesday. However, the president said restrictions on international travel, public gatherings, including funerals and religious events, spectators at sporting events, as well as the curfew, will remain in place. Helen Supin is a Zimbabwean art and craft trader at the Rosebank Mall in Johannesburg. She hopes that soon the borders and the airports will be reopened and the tourists will start to come again to breathe new life into their arts and craft businesses.
I greet you all, thanking God to be alive on this pandemic. We have seen that our president have lifted our level to level 2, meaning that most of the places are now open, though some of the places are not operating. As the traders of Rosebank, mainly our customers are tourists. So at the moment, nothing is happening We have opened the whole market to start operating, but we don't have customers. And like local customers, they come, but there are usually few, of which maybe you can see one or two out of 100 and something traders in the market. So we pray that we go to level one. We pray that the borders open. We pray that the airports also opens so that we can also start generating from our own business. As it is right now, it's as good as dead.
How have you and other traders been supporting yourselves during the lockdown months? Did you get any assistance from the government?
As the traders of Rosebank Craft Market, I don't think there is anybody who got assistance from any kind of government. As for me, I did 4 good applications. All of them were rejected. Not even one was approved. So can you just imagine that I've been running this business for more than 20-something years. I wasn't even able to get 1 rand from the government. I did submit all the required documents, but I got nothing from the government. Even those 350, some of the people that are already crying, saying that they applied, but they never got those 350. So we are just praying that God intervenes, this COVID-19 finishes, or at least if we go to level one, even if we did not go to level one, okay, if we open borders in the airports, I think that will be better for us.
Thank you very much, Helen. So nice to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
Helen Tsupeng is a Zimbabwean art and craft trader at the Rosebank Mall in Johannesburg, South Africa. Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the postponement of the FIFA Under-20 Women's World Cup 2020 African qualifiers by the Confederation of African Football. The continent's football ruling body, CAF, said due to travel restrictions across parts of Africa as a result of COVID-19, the qualifiers for the FIFA Under-20 Women's World Cup Costa Rica Panama 2020, scheduled for September 2020, had to be postponed. The first round, first leg, was fixed for the 3rd to the 5th of September 2020, with the return leg from the 10th to the 12th of September 2020. Two teams will qualify to represent Africa at the final tournament from the 20th of January to the 6th of February 2021. Staying with women's football, the Super Falcons of Nigeria have been without a substantive coach since Swede Thomas Denabe left the team in October 2019. After promising to announce his replacement 4 weeks ago, the Nigerian Football Federation president Amaju Pinnick is blaming the recruitment firm for the delay.
It will be interesting to know that so many world-class coaches have applied to be coach of the Super Falcons. As well, the technical director, the executive committee have met and said, okay, we are going to come out with the technical director within the next few days. And they mandated the technical committee to work in tandem with our integrity office.
In tennis news, Tunisian Onis Jabeur suffered a dramatic late collapse against American teenager Coco Gauff to crash out of the Lexington Open at the weekend in the United States. The 8th seed, who led by a set and 4-2 in the second one, eventually lost 6-4, 4-6, 6-1 in 1 hour 58 minutes. The Tunisian, who currently enjoys a career-best ranking at 39, admitted that she had been unable to find her rhythm as the lengthy time out from competition due to COVID-19 had affected her. In athletics, African and Commonwealth record holder in javelin, Julius Yego of Kenya, has weighed in on the possible reasons why athletes fall short of their whereabout rules. World Anti-Doping Administration and Management System captures and monitors athletes' movement at any given time to check doping. Julius Yego says having third party fill the Anti-Doping Administration and Management System may be responsible for some athletes' challenges with the system.
And I find it so easy for me to feel, nobody feels for me. And in case I have a problem with whereabouts, I'm the one who knows everything about why I fail to give, I fail, or like I have a way about failure. So, but if you give a third party, and this is what happens in Kenya a lot, and most of the cases we have is maybe a manager is feeling for the athlete.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good day. And that's it for this Monday, August 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butt in Washington, hoping that you will have a beautiful week.